We're back with another episode of the Sean Mo Hoops podcast. I'm pleased to have a special guest, Dave Klatsky, with me today. Dave is currently the assistant coach at Colgate in the Patriot League, who just had a fantastic week and fantastic month clinching the top seed in the Patriot League. And Dave also runs a fantastic podcast called Stat Chat, which most recently had Ken Pomeroy on. And that was how I was first introduced today, was listening to him on a podcast. And I reached out, and luckily, he was able to come on. But Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great, Sean. You mentioned it a little, but we just took down the regular season Patriot League championship for the first time in 23 years. So good things up here in Hamilton. I'm really proud of the group, and we're all pretty fired up to accomplish that. And hopefully, we're not done.
Yeah, definitely some big news. And before we kind of really get into it, you know, one, congratulations on the accomplishment, but two, just going back to really the beginning of February, you guys are sitting at 5-5 in the conference, and then throughout the month and one game this, you know, into March this past weekend, you guys reel off eight consecutive wins. Was there kind of something that clicked after that Boston University loss, or just, you know, momentum building win after win?
Well, yeah, we got our starting point guard back, who's terrific. So that always helps. He missed, I believe, five games with an injury, and we battled without him. I think it actually helped our team. You know, I never would want anybody to get injured, especially such a key part of our team. But what it did was it allowed some other guys to kind of have to step up and do some things they weren't really comfortable with. And I think then when we got Jordan back, he, you know, some of these other guys had kind of been in the fire a little bit more and were able to do a little bit more. So it may have in the long run helped our team, even though clearly we are a better team with our starting point guard, who is, I imagine the all-league stuff will come out today, but I imagine will be somewhere on the all-league teams. So that was the obvious one. But you said it. We were sitting at 5-5, and three games out of first with six left. It wasn't, or with eight left, it wasn't looking good. And then we kind of just turned it on, and we've been playing confident now. I think confidence begets confidence, and we started playing well, started clicking. Guys kind of figured out their roles, and then getting Jordan back really kind of pushed us over the top. So, you know, we're playing well right now, but the league is tough. The league is tough. I think four of those wins were games where we might have been tied or losing with 2 minutes left. So, you know, those could go either way, and it's a whole different season. It's a whole different outlook, but we found a way to win them, and now we're sitting here able to host the Patriot League tournament from here on out if we can somehow keep winning.
Yeah, and you mentioned 23 years since that it had happened, and that's going all the way back to the O'Donnell Foyle era in the 90s. So, how big is that news, and how exciting was it this weekend, just kind of obtaining that first place position and being able to kind of celebrate, but also look forward to really the next week and a half?
Yeah, Sean, I got to take you back 8 years to kind of really fulfill this answer. I remember our first couple years here, just kind of, you know, we were bad. That, you know, we came a long way. So I think we were KenPom 320 our first year, and then slowly kept rising. But, you know, at that time, this moment seemed impossible, to be honest with you. And I knew we could get better, but I really wasn't sure if we could ever get to the point where we were, you know, playing for a championship or competing for a championship. We talked about it in the office. I remember, you know, things would go wrong, or we'd be disappointed with things, and it'd be more like, all right, let's just relax. It's a process. It's a long process. Let's not try and fix things in day one. Let's build a culture. Let's find players. Let's have an offense that is unstoppable. Well, that part is nice, but and then kind of just go from there. So this is really special. And I've been here all 8 years with Coach Langle. He's done, I mean, I think he's so under the radar as a coach, because what we've done is really hard. And people that have played or been at Colgate or coached at Colgate understand that, but it's a really hard job, and Coach has really kind of taken it step by step and kind of gotten us there. So I to answer your question, we are it is a really big deal for us. We're really happy about it. We're really proud of the guys. You know, I hit up a couple of our former players, and I really believe this, but I think anyone who's touched the program over the last 8 years kind of had a piece in this because of where we've come from. So, you know, that's a long-winded answer, and I hope you can kind of feel how proud I am of everybody involved for this, for what we've done here at Colgate.
Just to kind of go back in time, and I know you mentioned when you first came over in 2011, but, you know, even going back further than that, you played basketball at Penn, and after graduation, went into finance for several years before going back, or I guess going into the coaching ranks at the D3 level. And just kind of looking at your bio, was very curious about that transition and what kind of caused you to go into coaching at that standpoint, and kind of how difficult or challenging it was to obtain that first position.
Yeah. So you were going back a little bit, but, you know, as a college senior, I finished playing and was able to land a really good finance job. So I was just excited to get going and make some money, you know, kind of start your life and have a little bit more control. So coaching wasn't even on my radar at that point. Playing was. I did think about maybe going overseas and playing. But after I got the job, I knew it was such a hard job to get at that age. I was just probably a little naive in it. But so I jumped right into the finance world. I was working for about 4 years playing men's leagues on the side. And I'll never forget it. We were playing in a men's league, and I must have boxed somebody out, and they called a foul on me. And, you know, I'm a little fiery at times. So I started going off on the ref. And he told me, "You're not allowed to drive a guy out when you're boxing out." And I was like, "That's exactly what you're allowed to do. That's how you teach it." And at that point, I realized that, like, what am I doing arguing with a men's league ref making, you know, $20 to just get through the game? Right. And at that point, I was like, I got to get back into real basketball. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I need to be able to teach and have a you know, be there for people to learn and teach the correct way. So I did what any 23-year-old would do. I went to Google, and I Googled local Division III schools, and Stevens Tech popped up. So I was working in Hoboken, and actually I was working in Jersey City. So right down the road was a school called Stevens Tech. I really had never heard of it, but I Googled it. And wouldn't you know, my freshman high school basketball coach was now an assistant at Stevens. So got in touch with him. He got me in touch with the head coach, and I basically told him, "Look, I just want to help. Like, I'm not looking for it. I got a good job. I'm not looking to get paid, but I need to be involved, and hopefully you can let me come as much as I can." And he said, "Sure." So that's great. Why would I not want free help?
Right.
So I helped out, and then as the years went by, I really, really enjoyed it. So I was, you know, taking my off days at work to go travel with the team to Utica and Rochester, and I kind of knew that this was something that I really enjoyed and loved and had a passion for. You know, I'd be sitting at my desk at work drawing up plays, calling the head coach saying, "Hey, I got something we can do late game," you know, like just crazy things like that. And so I knew kind of in the back of my head I needed to get into coaching, but I didn't want to jump in and do the old, you know, I had a really good job. I was enjoying life. So I didn't want to do the old, like, you know, video coordinator to ops to, you know, spend 5 to 10 years kind of working my way up. Yep. So I kind of said to myself, if the right opportunity arises where I think we can win and, you know, I'm not starting at the very bottom, that's what I'll look for. You know, I did have some experience coaching at that time because of the Stevens job. And, you know, the way life turns, Matt Langle ended up getting the Colgate job. Matt was a teammate of mine at Penn, and we talked through it, and I was really excited about it. I couldn't have been more ready to kind of jump in. He gave me the opportunity, which I'll always be thankful for, to kind of be an assistant coach, because, you know, we go a little bit ways back, all the way back to when we were playing, which is now close to 20 years ago. But and you know, I looked up Colgate, thought you could do some things here. I wasn't sure all about it, but it happened so quickly. Next thing I knew, I was on the sidelines working kids out and recruiting and getting ready to try and turn this thing around. So that's kind of the long story of how I got into coaching from the finance world.
Okay. What, I mean, looking back,
now,
when you first...
Actually, I should preface this, Sean. So I just got hit up by a senior at North Carolina, and he kind of asked the same question that I think might be coming of, what should I do? Should I get into sports, or should I get into, he seemed like a pretty smart kid, should I get into the, you know, the finance world? And I told him, if you got a good job, take the good job, because this is a hard, hard business, and you got to have a little bit of luck. You got to have some background with people that are important if you really want to make it. It's a really hard, really hard business, and I think it's even harder than when I got in 8 years ago, or 12 years ago. So my advice to him was, if you got a good job, take it, do some sports things on the side, because this is really hard. And unless you're connected or you have a last name of a head coach in the NBA or something, it's really hard. So I don't know if that was your next question, but that's kind of how I feel about it now, even, 8 years later.
Yeah. I mean, looking back on 8 years, when you look back kind of that first year at Colgate, what were some of the things, or I guess what were some of the main challenges, or just looking back saying, man, I can't believe I was doing this, but what were the biggest hurdles right off the bat, just for you personally, in terms of getting into the D1 coaching groove?
I mean, there's two ways to answer that, and I'll do the basketball side first. And obviously culture is so big in any program, any business. And that was the first thing we needed to do, is just kind of change the culture to believe in. I think that's the kind of the best word, is the Colgate had struggled for so long, and then, to come in and try and tell people, hey, yeah, this, we're going to do this. Like, we're going to win eventually. It was kind of like people looked at you like you were crazy, but that was the main thing. It's just kind of building that culture, getting guys that really wanted to be in the gym and could be bought in and wanted to work. And that was what I meant by process, and that took time. And then kind of figuring out, how. And I think we'll get to that later when you ask me about recruiting. But, the other side of the jump for me was, I lived in New York City for 8 years, where no matter what time you get out, you can have something to eat. You can find somewhere to go. You can have a drink any day of the week right. At night. So you come up to Hamilton, New York, and this is, our first 2 months, we're working our tails off, basically, in the office by 8:30, and we probably would work till 11 p.m., except there were no kitchens that were open past 9:30, so it was kind of a nice, we had to get to eat, we were all here by ourselves at that time, no wives, girlfriends, or anything like that, kids, and so we'd have to go, all right, it's 9 p.m., we got to go hit up the restaurants, because if we don't, we're going to end up going to the grocery store and getting something for ourselves that we got to make. So that was the culture shock of going from New York City, where, I lived for 8 years, and coming up here was a major difference, just in terms of lifestyle. So that was kind of the two things on the basketball side, and then on the life side that I kind of had to adjust to.
Okay. Well, yeah, I can imagine both of those not very easy, especially going from New York to Hamilton, but. And one of the things I'm curious about is, you're working alongside two other assistant coaches and, really playing basically two games a week. What is kind of the, I know it's at times you're in charge of a certain team to scout for. And when you're in charge of that, what is your, kind of walk me through, the days leading up to a game that you're kind of in charge of, just from a scouting perspective that you're doing, whether it's going to KenPom, and to me, that's a site that as a fan and kind of student of the game, I'm always on, and it's probably my most frequented site, but also Synergy and some other websites. And then once pretty much all there is to know about the opponent, how do you communicate that to the coach as well as the players? Just knowing that they don't have as much time to study or really read up on all the details, so how do you kind of communicate that in a quick and efficient manner to the different parties?
Sure. So I'll just walk you through like my thought process and kind of what I do leading up to a game. So as you said, we have three assistant coaches. We split the scouts up. We try and make it even, so you kind of have one game, then two off, then another game. But especially in the Patriot League, with the crazy way the schedule works, sometimes you would have, you know, only one game in between before you had another one of your own scouts. Mm-hmm. So I try and watch, you know, early in the season, I try and watch any, like, you know, 3 to 5 games of an opponent. So I'll back up. First thing I'll do is I'll always look at KenPom. Like you said, if you listen to that KenPom episode, you know I'm just as crazy as you about the amount of time spent on that site. So what I do there is I kind of, if you want to hear exactly what I do, you can go listen to that episode. But I basically look for anything that sticks out, anything that I think I need to be wary of when I watch film. So an example might be, you know, we just played Holy Cross and they're a really bad offensive and defensive rebounding team. So then I'll have that in my mind, but they are really good at forcing turnovers. So, you know, those things I'll kind of have in the back of my mind as I go to watch film. So then what I'll do is I'll watch probably, like I said, the last 3 to 5 games. The first game I watch, especially if it's not in league and I don't really know what they run or anything, I'll take a lot of notes on synergy. So any play that doesn't look familiar, I'll kind of jot it down. Any action, anything defensively, I'll kind of be pretty detailed with it. And that's game one. Then game two, I'm trying to do the same thing, but see if I can recognize what I just saw. So, you know, if they're running a play that's a back screen, fade screen, I'll like to see what that, and then place it with my other back screen, fade screen to kind of organize myself to see all the different type actions in a line. So then now I get to game 3 and 4 and I kind of see what they're running the most. And that's kind of how I start to organize my scout. So what we do at Colgate is we do, so 2 days before we watch personnel. And then 1 day before we watch basically what we call the scout, which is all like their tendencies and plays that they run. So now that I've watched a couple games and I have some idea of what they're doing, now I'll kind of break down the personnel and try and figure out, you know, guys' tendencies. Are they scorers? Are they passers? Do they go right? Do they go left? And kind of organize that in a fashion that I can relate to, but that I know that the players can relate to too. And I'll get to that in a little bit, how we share the info with them. So now I'll be watching their team, trying to figure out their plays and everything. And that knowing for 2 days beforehand, we're going to be going over their stuff. I got to be ready with Coach Langle to put this stuff in practice. So now to the next part of kind of how to relay this to the players. I would say of the information that I gather, probably about 10 to 15% gets to the players. So I now have to pick the 10 to 15% most important things that I think they can relate to that won't be too complicated. I don't want them overthinking. I just want them knowing, you know, a main action or a main tendency of the player or team. So when we watch personnel, it'll be, you know, if it's one of their main guys, I might have 7 to 8 clips. And of those 7 to 8 clips, I'm trying to find the things that they do best that maybe our guys can see and be ready for. So if you're a shooter, you're going to see some quick release shots or open shots. If you're not a guy that's a main scorer, if you're a role player, you're going to see just kind of him making an open shot and not really doing a whole lot. But that's kind of how I walk through personnel. I don't want to give them too much. So basically it's like right-hand dominant, left-hand dominant, shooter, not shooter are like the four main things. And then if there's anything else that sticks out, like terrific offensive rebounder, or what we call whiteboard, like a guy that you can just kind of go at, that I'll point out as well. So then the next day, so then in practice, we'll now go over some of their plays. And like I played and I feel like I kind of knew the game pretty well, but I don't know if everybody else feels like this, but it's really hard to know all a team's plays. So as a player, as a coach, like I watch 5 games and then I teach it. You learn more what you teach. So, like, yeah, I can see what's coming and call out the play usually from the bench. But as a player, when you have 1 day prep, 2 day prep, like, you're not going to know all the time that a back screen, fade screen, or, you know, screen to screener with the option to blow it off. And so a thing that we talk about a lot is kind of here's some actions, but just play, like be ready to guard whatever, because you're not going to know what's coming a lot of the time. So if you can pick out one or two plays that they do a lot and they can nail that, that's great. But you can't cheat the play. The college players are too good. So you got to really, you know, I don't like to OD on this is the eight plays they run and be ready for whatever it is. If they call 2X, you should know what 2X is. No, I just, that's too much, especially for guys that aren't high IQ guys. So, so we try and go over a couple of actions maybe, like, you know, if a team runs a lot of flat ball screens or if a team runs a baseline screen, we'll just throw that into like our shell drill instead of kind of, you know, not even mentioning that it's what Boston University might be doing, you know, so we'll just kind of guard it and kind of the coaches know that they do it, but the players may not even know that that's why we're doing it. So we just want it to be a normal practice with maybe an action or two from who we're playing. So that's kind of a full game plan. And then, you know, the day of we'll kind of review everything during shoot around, or if we don't have a shoot around kind of during meal. So that's kind of the steps that we take to kind of prepare our guys to play whoever we're playing in league or out of league.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, I appreciate the detailed response, and obviously a lot goes in it from a team perspective. So definitely appreciate the inside look. And I think that's easy to forget from a fan perspective when you're watching the game. But one question I've always been curious about is from a tournament perspective, whether it's, you know, the Patriot League tournament coming up or during the NCAA tournament, when you have a pretty quick turnaround between games, so you're playing really potentially two games or three games in a span of days, you know, just using your schedule as an example, right now you'll be playing the winner of Loyola Maryland and Boston University. And then, you know, knock on wood and not to get too far ahead, because I know that both those teams can be challenges, but if you were to win that game, then you're playing the winner of American Navy. So, you know, really in a few day span, there's four potential teams that you guys could be matching up with. And, you know, in that case, is it one assistant coach gets each of the teams, or how do you guys kind of approach it from a tournament perspective?
So we are, you know, the Patriot League is actually fortunate enough that we don't have back-to-back-to-back-to-back like some of the high major schools and even some of the mid-major conferences do as well. So we do have a couple of days in between. And like for this one, we got Boston, Loyola. We have 4 days. So this one will be fairly easy to prepare for. We'll split it up. What we try and do is the coach who had that team during the regular season kind of takes lead, but if a coach has back-to-back games, of course, that's going to be a little bit difficult. And it might be in this situation, one of our Coach Jordan has, he has Boston and American. So if that happens, he's going to be, and he's about to have a baby. So we're going to have to definitely help him. But in league, everything's different because you know these teams so well. So, I mean, I think it helps. I've been here 8 years. Coach Jordan's been here 7 years, and Pat Moore, our new guy, has been here 1 year, but he's 2 years, and he's played in this league. So I, even though they're not my scouts or Coach Jordan's scouts, it's so easy to do in league because you know them so well that I don't think it'll be too challenging to kind of prepare because you know these players backwards and forwards. It's just too important not to follow everybody's scouts when you're, you know, on staff for reasons like this, but also just because you want to win. So you want to help your players, even if it's not your scout. So it is challenging, like just the logistics of it, I guess, of like putting the presentation together, and we'll have to help each other out with that, especially if Coach Jordan has his baby. but no, I think we'll be prepared. Our guys already know the teams pretty well. So it's a little bit easier in league than say, and we haven't dealt with this yet, obviously, but if you do make the NCAA tournament, you know, and you do win around to kind of that turnaround to me where you don't know the team, you kind of got to be working ahead. And I remember when I was a player, you know, we weren't fortunate enough to win a game, but we were pretty close. And I know our assistant coaches they split the duties of the other two teams that you might play. So that's what we would do if we are fortunate enough to ever get to that position and, you know, have a chance to win. I guess it doesn't matter if you have a chance to win, you still got to prepare and be ready for that next game. So all three assistants kind of have to be ready to go with the one team you're playing and then the other two teams that you might possibly play in that 2-day span.
Okay. No, definitely a challenging aspect. And right now I have KenPom pulled up, and really this year you guys, offensively are very efficient, but you look at the effective field goal percentage and then 3-point percentage, you're in the top 20 in the country. What was the biggest, I guess, change from last year to this year in terms of the offensive end? And I know you guys have had even better offensive years in the past, where you guys have been top 10 in effective field goal percentage. But just going from last year to this year, what was kind of the biggest change or adjustment that occurred?
Yeah, I think our offense has always been our strength for the last 5 years when we really started to turn around. And this year, the truth is, it's the players. When you have good players, the system works even better. But our system has always kind of worked, and now we have really good players, and it's going to work even better. And that's kind of what we when Coach took over, we talked about what to do and came to the conclusion that, if you get to where you want to get to, let's have an offense in place that can maximize the talent. So there are a couple of years in his 8 years where we struggled, especially early on. But for the most part, we've always been near the top of the league in offense. And I think it's because of the way we play and practice that leads to that. So we do a lot of drills that emphasize spacing. So we play a very free style. It's a really hard scout because you can watch us and there's nothing that you'd be like, oh, they do this if that happens. No, it's we do this if you give us this. So it's kind of, and we work on the different reads pretty much every day in practice. And when you have good players, that one can read it and two can finish whether it's around the rim or make threes, then it becomes really hard to guard. So this year was kind of the culmination of that. And look, we're shooting a ridiculous percentage from three. I don't know what does it have it. Let's see, we're shooting what are we shooting from three in the league right
38.7.
38.7. So I actually thought it was a little bit higher. That's pretty good. But no, in league we're about 42. Yeah,
Okay.
that's a crazy number. And is that sustainable over a course of a whole season, like 30 games? I don't know. But we've done it over 18 games, and I just hope we can make it last three more games. But that really helps. We do get open shots, so that's part of it. But anytime you can shoot 42% from three, you're gonna have a really good chance to win games. But as far as from last year to this year, it really wasn't a big change. I mean, we added two new players, but we lost two really good players. I think our offense was good last year. It just wasn't this level right now. So
Right.
not a whole lot changed. It's just kind of the players changed. The guys that we have got older. They know the system better. So, I think Jordan Burns, our point guard, and this has been documented many times, but guys from the freshman to sophomore years can make big jumps. And he did. He was terrific his freshman year, but he made a big jump this sophomore year and was really good until he got hurt. And now he's also playing half injured now, but he's still really productive. But I think that really helps when you can get a freshman to sophomore that makes a huge jump like that.
Yeah, and you mentioned talented players and Jordan Burns, and then I'm gonna mispronounce Rapolis Ivanskis, who was actually a player. He was top 100 player, and when I was living in Chicago, he was playing in the Chicago suburbs, so I was very familiar with him. And he went to Northwestern before transferring over. But one thing I always love the recruiting aspect of teams and how they do it. And a lot of the time the fans are following the top 100 guys, or your Duke, UNC, Kentuckys, where you just kind of have your pick of the litter and you're targeting top 15, top 20 guys. But the Patriot League obviously have to be much more selective and kind of understand your system and the talent level. And it looks like on your team that there are several guys from the NESPAC, so the New England Prep League, which I've seen a decent amount of those teams going to the up in Albertus Magnus, the prep school showcase, and know how well coached they are. But from a recruiting standpoint, how do you kind of target guys for your program? And is it from certain areas or certain abilities? I'm always curious, especially at at your level of kind of what you are looking for in guys and how the recruiting process works at a high level.
Yeah. And you mentioned the NEPSAC, and I think prep school has been kind to us. You know, just looking at our roster, yeah, Jordan Burns, Will Raymond, Malcolm Regisford, Tucker Richardson. So, you know, four of our top seven guys have played prep school. And I think it's really helped all four of them. I don't know if any of them were completely ready to come in before their prep year. I think they all would have been good, but now they all ended up being really good. So I think that's a league that we definitely target. You know, it's in the Northeast. It's not too far to drive to see most of the schools, but there's a lot of prep schools all over the country. And you asked, do we target a region? No, we target the world. Like, if you look at our roster, we got Texas, Chicago, Portugal. We've had, or we still have Australia, California, Indiana, New York, New Jersey. So we target everywhere. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the good things about being such a good academic school is we can go anywhere, especially in the country. And you may not have heard of us, but then when you look up Colgate, you see, you know, a top 20 school, a beautiful campus. And you immediately say, or see what our graduates have done with their lives, and you immediately can get on the map. Now, that's the initial part of it. Then you're dealing with a lot of other competition. And I think recruiting to the Patriot League is kind of a different beast. And I think there's a learning curve to figure it out. But, you know, you're talking about a league that's probably the second best academic league in the country, but in everyone's view pales in comparison to the Ivy League. So we know that that's the general consensus, even though it might not, you know, Colgate graduates sometimes do as well as some of the other Ivy graduates, but it just the view of it, we know that going in. So if you're getting recruited by the Ivies, it's kind of like, all right, a question we want to know is, where are your grades? Do you fall in that little range where you can get into the Patriot League, but not into the Ivies? That's great for us. And then money-wise, do you fall into that range where you're going to have to pay a lot of money to go to a school that's very similar to Colgate? So, you know, the upper class, where money doesn't matter, those guys are tough to get at Colgate. And then the lower class, where they have no money and they're getting basically full rides to the Ivies, they're tough to get too. But that middle range can kind of be the sweet spot for the Patriot League in a way because, you know, do you want to pay 70 grand a year or, you know, $250,000 over 4 years or go to school for free and kind of get the same type of education. So, you know, not the exact same, but pretty close to some of those Ivies. So that's kind of, you know, the way we've looked at it is where can we get guys that fall into those ranges that can also play basketball? So that's kind of number one on the high school side. And then you mentioned, you know, Rapp, Ivanauskas as a transfer from Northwestern, a top 100 kid. And that's another avenue that we've used is trying to find transfers that, you know, for whatever reason didn't work out at their first school and need a new start or maybe it was the wrong level and can kind of flourish at our school and our program and kind of help themselves and help the program to kind of be better.
Well, switching gears, I know in the news, the NCAA, the recruiting calendar has been a popular subject, especially with the Rice Commission and looking at curbing the AAU influence and kind of bringing that back to high school. But with that, going into this year, they've changed some of the live period viewing. So last year, you guys were allowed to be out on the road 2 weeks in April and then 3 weeks during July. And now this year they've condensed that to one in April and supposed to be having each state kind of run their own camper tournament in June, which I believe there've been some issues in New York, but from a Patriot League perspective, how does the new NCAA rules kind of affect you guys from kind of the smaller side of the Division I level?
Well, I kind of want to talk big picture here because I you know, obviously everyone kind of comments on this and I really haven't commented on the new structure. I think I'm in the minority that I really did want change. I think now when – I think everybody wanted change, and then they made the change, everyone's like, no, go back to the way it was. It was fine. Like, there's problems everywhere. There's always going to be unintended consequences. I'm kind of looking forward to the change just to kind of see something different, see how it works. My proposal would be let's set out 5 years, maybe like 10 years, and let's try something different every year. And let's see then after 5 years, we'll make a decision what the best was. So we've already done, you know, 2 in April, 3 in July, all AAU, or not all AAU, but pretty much open in July for camps or AAU. Let's try this. Then let's try all AAU, but 1 in May, 1 in June, 2 in July. Then let's try no AAU at all, like just high school. Well, that would be impossible. Or maybe just camps. Then let's try something crazy where college coaches can coach a kid at a camp for one of the weekends, so we actually get to interact with the kids. Let's get creative. I'm sure we could come up with 5 different things that, and then at the end of that, let's say, all right, what do we like the most? What did we not like? What worked? What didn't work? Are we out on the road too much? Are we not out enough? Are we getting the correct evaluation in the time that we have? Are we getting the correct relationship that we have? So like, to me, if you're gonna mess with it, let's really mess with it. Let's get crazy and try a lot of different things and go in so everybody knows, like, all right, we're trying something new every year. This is going to be a 5-year rolling period, and then we're going to make a decision. And maybe the decision is let's change it up every year or every 2 years. And I know that's a lot of work for people involved trying to run different events and not knowing, but maybe we lay it out now for the next 5 years, and then you can kind of plan ahead and see, like, the camp directors can know, like, all right, this year we're screwed. We're not allowed to run any camps. We're not going to make any money. But then the next year we can run camps 3 of the 4 weeks in July and 1 in June or 1 in April, and then kind of go from there. So I don't know if that's ever been brought up, but I do feel like it is semi-broken, but I also feel like it does kind of work. Like, I know a lot of kids – you know, when AAU season's done, it's sad, and that means something. That means that they enjoyed playing with their team and that they had some good memories and good thoughts about it. I know I did. So that part of it is kind of sad, but I think we got to find a way to kind of keep the bad stuff, the stuff that we all know happens, at a minimum. You're never going to eliminate it completely, but if we can keep it at a minimum and kind of give control to kids and their families and see where that goes, I think that could be beneficial for everybody. But in terms of your question,
definitely like the
– No, go ahead. What were you saying?
No, I was just going to say I definitely like the creativity and you know, kind of really accepting the challenge, because I think a lot of people would prefer it stays the same and are resistant to change. But I think we've seen that – There's definitely issues, and I think it'll be very interesting to see how this summer goes and you know, the years after this. But just to kind of wrap this up and keep it on a recruiting question, you know, I'm sure these stories exist all over the place, but, you know, off the top of your head, are there any kind of crazy recruiting stories of kind of coming across a guy that you weren't supposed to watch, or you know, some player coming out of the blue over email? Do you have kind of any recruiting stories on the top of your head to share with the audience?
I mean, there's a lot. I'll try and think of, I'll try and narrow it down. I will say that, you know, recruiting is an interesting beast. You know, you might stand and watch a kid for 8 hours of your life and then be told you have no chance. So you're like, oh man, that 8 hours was a waste. So you kind of got to recruiting is, if you can know right away you have no chance, that always makes it better. So like I said, I always like to hear no rather than maybe. But I'll give you one story from early in our careers here at Colgate. I don't remember the kid's name. It's probably better that way. But to recruiting a kid out in California, got his name from someone. I went and watched him, checked the book, watched them all game, really liked him. So I told the rest of our staff, you know, the rest of the summer, like, hey, go watch this kid. He's pretty good. I think, you know, I've been talking to him on the phone. I had Coach Lango talk to him. We were in good with him, trying to get him on a visit in the fall. So our next guy goes and watches, and he was like, "Yeah, he's okay." And he's like, "Which one is he?" And I was like, "The one with the long hair." And so he goes to the book and he's like, "I don't know. I don't think that's him." I was like, "No, I already watched him. It's the kid with the long hair." There's a white kid with like long kind of blonde hair. I was like, "How many are there out there like that?" And he's like, "Just one." And he's like, "But in the book, that's a different kid." And now don't forget, we've already been down the road of like inviting him for an official visit and everything. And so then the next guy goes, and we Googled him too. We Googled him, and sure enough, the kid had long blonde hair. But then the next coach goes, and he's like, "I looked in the book again. I think it's the other white kid." And we're like, "No, it can't be. Like, Google him. Like, what does he look like?" And these two white kids look pretty similar. One had a shaved head and one had long hair. Well, of course, we figured out, because that coach then asked somebody, and of course we had the wrong kids. So we had been recruiting the wrong kid, because the first time I saw him, he was in the book wrong and used to have long blonde hair. So that was kind of a lesson in, all right, make sure you know who you're recruiting before you invite him on an official visit, because that did not end well when we had to kind of tell him, "Oh yeah, I don't think it's going to work out," because we want the other kid. So that's one example of us just completely, or me completely botching a situation and then having to get out of it a little bit later. But that's recruiting for you.
Well, I'm sure to go along with that one, many, many good ones. And obviously with the talent you guys have, a lot of positive ones recently. But, one, just wanted to thank you for responding so quickly to my email last week and coming on and chatting a little bit about, you know, what the life of an assistant coach looks like and your background. And I'm really enthusiastic to see what comes up over the next week or so in the Patriot League. So good luck this Thursday and hopefully for two more games after that, and that we'll be seeing you guys in the NCAA tournament in a few weeks.
Me too. I'm really curious to see how this next week's going to play out too. Obviously we're excited and nervous up here, and we know how hard it's going to be. We play two teams, or the two teams we play have already beaten us once, so we know nothing's going to be easy. Hopefully we can get it done and, like you said, make some more history. But Sean, I really appreciate you having me on, and once again, good luck to you as well.
Thank you. And once again, it's Stat Chat is the podcast. I know you had Ken Pomeroy on, the stat guru in the college basketball world. And do you have any other podcasts coming up, or just kind of going to wait till after the season ends?
Yeah, I got two on the docket. I don't know if I'll have time before our conference tournament to get them out, but over the next probably 3 weeks, I should have two more coming on. One kind of about this rebounding study that I've kind of teased out there that I will be doing soon, and then another one with a guest, hopefully over the next 2 weeks. But yeah, check it out if you care about basketball and stats. It's kind of interesting. So hopefully some people will check it out now.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting to me, and looking forward to the future ones. But once again, thank you for coming on, and good luck over the next few weeks in the Patriot League tournament.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it.
That wraps up another edition of Sean Mohoop's Pod. A big thanks to Dave Klatsky for coming on and talking about his background and life at Colgate. With conference tournaments kicking off this week, we'll be back on shortly to walk through the low to mid-major tournaments and preview the big ones coming up before Selection Sunday. Talk to you guys soon.